This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levick, WMRA's news director. So glad to have your company on this Sunday afternoon. Stay tuned to get an inside look at a very old train tunnel now out of use under Afton Mountain that local officials are working hard to open up for recreational purposes. Also, a look back at last weekend's Chihamba Festival in Charlottesville and a preview of the giant mural combining paint and poetry on a wall near the UVA grounds. But first, the global craze over the new augmented reality game Pokemon Go, which was released in the U.S. early in July, has also caught on in the Valley. On a recent hot afternoon, players were out and about in Harrisonburg, smartphones in hand, willingly sharing their personal information in exchange for fun. WMRA's Christopher Clymer Kurtz reports.
I don't know much about gaming, and even less about Pokemon. So earlier this week, I joined the Pokemon Go Trainers of Harrisonburg Facebook group, which is where I learned that Quartz Square is one of the good places in town to find gyms and Pokestops, and therefore players, or trainers as they're called, since they're training their Pokemon to, well, do stuff, I guess.
I've already seen a number of people walking along staring at the phones, and I don't know if that's normal or if they're playing Pokemon Go. I'm not sure. May I interview you?
Sure, if we can stand in the shade.
Ariel Hallam and Ray Oram are JMU students studying, respectively, computer science and network security and telecommunications. Ariel says she's been playing 2 hours a day. Ray, 3 to 4.
For example, the spring over there is a Pokestop. The courthouse is a Pokestop. The chalk wall over there is a Pokestop. There's one by the ice cream place down there. I've had ice cream a lot this week, so...
And see, this stop gave me something, and it has a module. So I've collected those items. And you can see this with the hearts around it is luring Pokemon as opposed to the other ones which aren't activated around here. And then there's these big gyms where people go to fight the Pokemon.
A bit later, Gabe Chapman and his mom and brothers are just coming out of the public safety building when I spot them.
I spend about an hour a day. I try to get out once or twice a day and walk around. Came out here about 2 nights ago, 10, 12 o'clock, and there's just a whole bunch of people downtown hitting the Pokestops, found over 60 Pokemon. It was a good night.
His mom, Rita Chapman, likes the game too, as only a mother can.
It gets them out of the house. It gets me out of the house to walk with them.
Out of the house indeed. In the shade of the courthouse lawn, meet Heaven Ford.
I play video games more than I live my life. So it's like a video game on the go. I can, like, see what's happening in the real life while I play a video game.
Squirrel!
Not far away is a nostalgic David Snyder.
It's a piece of my childhood. I remember when it first came out when I was a kid. The cards, the cartoon, you know, it was, I wish Pokemon were real. And now, in a sense, they are.
So what am I seeing right there?
I actually just caught a Pokemon.
You just caught one?
Yeah.
Just while we were talking, you caught one?
Yeah.
But there's a sober caution to consider. Benjamin Heatwall has been a computer programmer for 3 decades. He works with a number of software products that store people's data.
When you sign up for a new application like this or anything else, and it says, you know, do you trust this developer? You should actually take a moment to reflect as to whether or not you do. What kind of information is going to be collected? How long is it going to be kept? And how are they going to use it?
When Pokemon Go was first released on July 6, iOS users who logged in with their Google accounts had to agree to terms of service allowing the app full access to their Google accounts. That has been described by Pokemon Go's parent company, Niantic Labs, as a mistake that is being fixed. But that didn't deter the nearly 21 million daily users in the U.S. who were active in the game's first week.
It should have raised more red flags than it did. They just clicked the button because it was a play or don't play button.
The Pokemon Go users I ask seem unfazed by this and aren't that worried about Niantic knowing their every movement. Player Joshua Lindsay.
I don't see much difference between what everyone is already using and the app that is actually using. Like, it's just open and more blunt about it.
As Ariel Hallam says, Pokemon Go itself uses user-generated content from an earlier game from Niantic.
From their previous game called Ingress. In Ingress, the goal of the game was to take a picture of a place and protect that place from the opposite team. They just pulled the data from that and changed them to gyms and Pokestops in this game.
As her friend Ray adds, Niantic made
a game to do the work for them, which is really awesome.
For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer Kurtz.
Well, grab a lantern. Now we go from the great outdoors to deep underground. Tucked deep within Afton Mountain is a 19th century train tunnel engineered by Claudius Crozet that has sat dormant for the last 70 years. WMRA's Jordy Yeager went inside both the tunnel and local efforts to bring it back to life.
Basically, we're walking on the original railroad bed that carried trains through the mountain from 1858 to 1944. It was right here. And so over here to our left, you will see the current active track, which parallels this all the way to the tunnel, you know.
Alan Hale is the chairman of Nelson County's Board of Supervisors, and he's referring to the Claudius Crozet Blue Ridge Tunnel. It was the longest tunnel in the country when it was built in the 1850s, stretching through more than 4,000 feet of solid rock from Nelson to Augusta County, an engineering marvel. But if you're like me and tens of thousands of others who pass directly over it every day as you drive up and over Afton Mountain, you're none the wiser.
The tunnel was abandoned in the early 1940s.
If anybody's as passionate about the tunnel as Alan Hale, it's Steve Carter, Nelson County's county administrator. Carter says when the nation's train system switched from steam to diesel some 70 years ago, it meant switching to bigger rail cars, which meant building a bigger tunnel, which has meant that the Blue Ridge Tunnel has just been sitting in the dark. But Carter says all these years later, it hasn't lost an ounce of its allure.
Just as everyone I've taken up there over the last many, many years, when they see that portal, the beginning of the tunnel, the entrance to the tunnel, you can see that look on their face. I'm sure I had it, but I haven't seen anyone who hasn't just been awed when they get to either side, eastern or western portal. It's just, it just sort of captures you.
That awe is a good part of what helped Nelson County and the city of Waynesboro land $1.3 million from the Commonwealth Transportation Board earlier this year to open the tunnel back up, but not for trains, rather to make it a centerpiece of outdoor public recreation in the area for hikers, bikers, and wheelchairs alike.
Oh, look, there's a little beaver.
Is that a beaver?
Yeah, it is a beaver. Look at him.
Less than 3 miles from the tunnel's western portal, Waynesboro's Director of Parks and Recreation, Dwayne Jones, strolls along the city's new greenway, a mile-long paved foot and bike path that follows the South River.
The Blue Ridge Tunnel is a wonderful, wonderful resource, but one of the disadvantages is it's short. If you're on a bike, you're going to be through the tunnel and back very quickly. If you're walking, you know, obviously taking a little more time, but our greenway is accessible for bikes and pedestrians. So you start making those linkages, and then you've really got a longer trail. Potentially folks that may stay overnight may do the trail more than once, and it really opens up lots of opportunities.
The tunnel was constructed to connect the valley in central Virginia with the rest of the country's industry to the west and the state capital and coastal ports of commerce to the east. And now, more than 150 years later, it's being revamped with the hope of once again bringing business back to an area hit hard by a loss of manufacturing jobs over the last several decades.
Here, you want to watch the drips.
Alan Hale's flashlight cuts through the pitch black as we make our way into the tunnel's western entrance. A structural engineer recently determined it sound and safe, but as Hale says, it leaks. A steady stream of crystalline water trickles through the tunnel's walls and ceiling, creating puddles and streams that will eventually be funneled off to side ditches when it opens to the public.
Well, what we're seeing here is solid rock that has been just this way since the 1850s.
At least a dozen men were killed by explosions in the tunnel, and hundreds more in the area died from cholera, according to Mary Lyons, who wrote a book on the tunnel. As enslaved African-American men were forced to work on the outside of the tunnel, hundreds of Irish immigrants labored inside for nearly a decade, says Alan Hale.
Well, they had to hand drill these. So one man is holding a star bit, or star drill, you would say, and another fellow is swinging a sledgehammer. And they bang away on that till they get in. As you can see, they're not very deep, maybe a couple of feet. Then they pack it with black powder, run a fuse back, and shoot it. So that was incredibly labor-intensive. Some of their slowest months of going through this greenstone, they only made 16 feet of headway, you know. So that's takes a lot of months to go all the way through.
Now, a century and a half later, the tunnel's rehabilitation is just as slow. After a decade of chipping away, one grant application after another, in 2014, the first of three redevelopment phases was completed, a paved parking lot near Afton and a cleared footpath to the eastern portal, neither of which will be open to the public until phase two and three have been finished, which is expected next year.
All right, at this point, we have walked into the tunnel for about 700 feet, and we are looking at a solid reinforced concrete barrier with a 2-foot diameter pipe, and that barrier is 10 foot long through that pipe, and then there's another one 2,000 feet beyond this one that is 14 feet long.
Those two giant concrete bulkheads were part of a failed attempt in the 1950s to create a natural gas storage unit in the middle of the tunnel. The final phases of the tunnel's rehab will see the removal of those barriers, as well as the regrading and paving of a continuous path throughout and a trail in the parking area on the western side. It's been a long time coming, says Carter.
We're well positioned to move forward, a lot more work to do, but after about 15 years of working on this project, we hope that there is light at the end of the tunnel now.
For WMRA News, I'm Jordy Yeager.
Chihamba's 27th African American Cultural Arts Festival took place in Charlottesville last weekend. If you missed it, that's okay. WMRA's Marguerite Gallerini was there and has this report on the annual gathering that mixes social activism with some good fun.
Friends gather around music, food, and a common African American heritage. This is essentially the vibe at this year's edition of the Chihamba Festival, which took place on the last weekend in July. On the way in to the Jefferson School's African American Heritage Center, I spot a huge table displaying a dozen containers with traditional food prepared by chefs from Ghana. Wearing red lipstick and a bright yellow African dress, Ruby Boston is at the entrance, greeting everyone with a bright smile and a hug. She is one of the coordinators of the festival.
The meaning of Chihamba is the light, and the light that we can shine on this community, and today more than ever with so many things going on in the community and around the world and the nation, it's important that we connect our true story with history because so much has been left out.
And a way to make history is first to recognize one's roots and celebrate them every day. For that, Chihamba offers various events designed to celebrate and educate about the heritage of people of African ancestry.
They do a lot of events here. Last time I came, it was amazing. There were a bunch of tables set up, and they had different rooms open, and there were auctions, and it was amazing.
That's 11-year-old Madeline, enthusiastic about the festival's opening day on Thursday.
Tonight is the Taste of Ghana. Friday is the Ladies' Night Fashion and Hair Show. It's here to Jefferson again, and then Saturday from 10 to 7 is going to be the Cultural and Arts Festival.
Charles Lewis served as the host of the main day of the festival on Saturday at Washington Park, a day shared with the 9th Annual Community Health Fair. The day opened with a morning prayer before continuing with storytelling, scholarships, contests, and live bands, such as the All for Christ Male Chorus. Lewis serves on Chihamba's executive board and mentors at the 100 Black Men of Central Virginia. I asked him what Chihamba means to him.
Chihamba represents a beautiful connection of African Americans connecting to their homeland by memorializing and celebrating the rich culture and heritage and how we can still take part in that here and how we can celebrate it here and experience here.
Lewis took the opportunity to get the crowd excited about another event coming up this weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, two things. As y'all know, I'm a member of the 100 Black Men. And of course, for a while, people have been saying, what about the 100 Black Women? Do y'all, you know, mentor the young girls as well? They need help as well. Right? Very true.
The 100 Black Women Interest Group will meet in downtown Charlottesville on Sunday, August 7th from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. at 101 East Main Street. This kind of project, directed to Black youth, is well inscribed in Chihamba's goal. Co-chair of the festival's board, Lily Williams, explains.
We try to be mentors to the younger people and just try to keep it peaceful.
family oriented. We're teaching the younger people more about the African culture, what it means, teaching them where they come from and what their ancestors went through and what they can grow up to be, because they can grow up to be anybody and do anything. So we're one big happy family.
The festival this year was a reminder that it is above all a sort of big family reunion, an occasion for everyone to meet and keep in touch. Anthony and his daughter Emma are enjoying the event for the second time.
My daughter and I are here. She's getting a cheeseburger and we're just kind of walking around and hanging out, having a lot of fun.
I think this festival is nice and really arty and I'm enjoying it.
Co-chair Lily Williams has been involved with Chihamba for 15 years and has seen it change over the years. To her, it is more than just a festival. It is family.
This festival has grown by leaps and bounds. It started out at a smaller venue. It started out just being 1 or 2 days. Now we got 3 days and we have more sponsors. When I started, it was a smaller group, but you know, people go, people come, but we're very close-knit. Chihamba means a great deal to me.
For WMRA News, I'm Marguerite Gallerini.
If you've been walking around or driving through the UVA campus recently, you may have noticed a mural going up on the side of the Graduate Hotel. It's a collaboration among the Charlottesville Mural Project, a Philadelphia artist and a prize-winning poet. WMRA's Emily Richardson Lorente has the story.
Artist David Gwynn is balancing on a narrow metal swing stage 30 feet above the sidewalk. With one hand, he's operating a motor that pulls the platform up a thick cable. And with the other, he's repeatedly shoving himself away from the walls next to him, much like a skipper might keep a boat from bashing into a dock.
This lift is really the funkiest part because it's suspended from one cable, and as you move on it, it sways back and forth, but also up and down. So you're really on a rough seas.
For the last 3 weeks, David has been ascending and descending the walls here at the Graduate Hotel in Charlottesville. The 9-story mural he and his assistant are painting faces the University of Virginia.
From the scaffolding, you look out over the trees, and there's the rotunda, designed by Thomas Jefferson. Like, what a wild place to be in, to be contributing to this environment that's already so rich.
The location itself was part of the appeal for David when he was first approached about this project 17 months ago. But the other part that hooked him was who he would be collaborating with.
Hi, I'm Rita Dove. I'm a professor of English here at the University of Virginia.
A professor, sure, but Dove is also a Pulitzer Prize-winning poet and a former poet laureate. Here's a video clip of her being introduced by President Obama during a poetry evening at the White House a few years back.
As Rita Dove says, if poetry doesn't affect you on some level that cannot be explained in words, then the poem hasn't done its job. Also known as it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing.
Back on the swing stage in Charlottesville, muralist David Gwynn admits he saw that video too and was a little cowed by Rita Dove at first.
So it's very intimidating and incredible, really. And so really an amazing experience to get to spend time with someone who is that accomplished in the arts.
Of course, David is also an accomplished artist, albeit of the wall, not the page. He estimates that he's painted about 45 murals, many in Philadelphia, where he's from, but some in other states and even several overseas. The mural he's creating here is based on one of Rita Dove's poems, which, it turns out, worried her a bit at first.
My concern as the poet is that the poem itself just becomes a prop for someone to, you know, put flowers around it or something. And I thought the visual and the words should have a dance with one another in a way.
The poem that Dove and Gwynn ultimately selected?
Testimonial. Back when the earth was new and heaven just a whisper. Back when the names of things hadn't had time to stick.
That was inspiring to me to create something abstract because I thought of a time before time, like an elemental time, when there's just shapes.
The world called and I answered.
That line, "The world called and I answered," will be painted in 2-foot-tall letters on the main face of the mural, some 70 feet above the ground. Beneath the text, the mural will be a riot of geometric shapes dancing across the wall in a rainbow of colors. Piercing triangles and languid arcs, in blues, yellows, oranges, and greens. Together they suggest a landscape, a horizon perhaps, a sun, a road stretching off into the distance.
I gave my promise to the world, and the world followed me here.
Back outside in the blazing sun, David is comparing a small paint-splattered print of his design to the wall of colors rising before him. He's standing side by side with Ross McDermott, the outgoing head of the Charlottesville Mural Project, which hired David and coordinated this installation.
In Charlottesville, we're taking what were dead spaces and we're transforming them into beautiful spaces.
Working with the New City Arts Initiative, Graduate Hotels, and UVA Arts, McDermott spent nearly 2 years pulling this project together, but he says it was well worth the effort.
The whole project just really gelled, and I think it's this perfect piece, and the visuals are really fitting.
With a week's worth of work left to do, artist David Gwynn is already thinking about what he'll leave behind when he returns to Philadelphia.
My hope is that people passing by will see this and just say, that's cool. And then go deeper, and then be like, oh, hey, what's this text on the wall? Ultimately, hopefully experience that spirit that's in the poem of, I'm beginning my life and I'm really excited about it.
The poem, in its entirety, will be integrated into the mural at sidewalk level. So beginning next week, and for the next 20 or 30 years, passersby will be able to read it and see the mural that it inspired. For WMRA News, I'm Emily Richardson-Lorente.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bibb and Dolly Frazier, Eugene Stoltz's architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, the Just Pax Fund, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of the Community Foundation of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. If you'd like to learn more about how we fund our news and how you can help, go to WMRA.org, mouse over News, then click on News and Information Fund. Find all of our stories from the newsroom at WMRA.org, and be sure to click like on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio. And follow me on Twitter at WMRA News to get the latest on our coverage. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and morning edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy the rest of your Sunday.